Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, Chris Evans here. This is the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, old friends and comedy heroes Faye Ripley and David Baddiel tell us all about their brand new consumer advice podcast, Buy, Leave It or Not. Available now via Audible. Red Bull's big boss, Christian Horner, gets us revved up ahead of the 2022 Formula One World Championship. Acting up-and-comer Harris Dickinson tells us how he feels to be an EE BAFTA Rising Star nominee ahead of the award-winning ceremony in March. Times Radio's Matt Shorty discusses his ongoing stand-up tour, Who's in Charge Here?, and his brilliant Times Radio show, plus his podcast and loads of other stuff. All of that and so much more to come, so Dapper Dave, do tell us who is first.
They've got TV, comedy and publishing wrapped up, so now you can add podcasting to that list. Yes. Their new podcast, Baddiel and Ripley's Buy, Leave It or Not, is available on Audible now. So please welcome two people that have stress tested fart pants and bacon aftershave so you don't have to. It's Faye Ripley and David Baddiel.
Hello.
All right, guys.
Are you all right?
Very well. So we've had Newman and Baddiel, Baddiel and Skinner, and now we have Ripley and Baddiel.
Basically, I get hated by a double act partner after a while. I have to move on.
Is that what happens?
Yeah, that's what happens. Well, it's going to happen eventually with Faye.
Well, what the eventual bit is that eventually you found someone it's going to work with, David.
When's that hit going to happen?
So there's that.
Baddiel.
And there's your wife not touching you anymore, which is why you have to sort of deploy these massage things that you've been testing.
Yeah, that's also true.
Massage guns.
Yeah, and that's why I have to find another woman.
You have a collection of guns, massage guns.
I do have a collection of massage guns.
Especially
that's
foot
true.
Massages.
Yeah, because basically my wife does touch me, but, you know, every so often she thinks, stop asking me for...
Only with gloves.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, well, a robot would be fine for affection. And that's, I got an electric foot massager, and I think I've got one of those. I mean, it's sort of like an actual gun. That's the weird thing about it.
Yeah.
But it's doing the opposite of a gun, which is relaxing you. A gun frightens you.
Yeah.
A massage gun relaxes you.
It depends who's wielding it, to be honest, and what they intend to do with it. And you do allude to that on the podcast. Of course, they have various attachments.
The massage gun. You seem to know quite a lot about yourself.
Well,
do you
have one? I've got two or three. I'm same as you.
Okay.
I don't think you have one. It's like bikes in the end.
No, yeah, you get very, very into them.
Because there's a rule for bikes. What's the rule for bikes?
The correct number of bikes to own is the current number of bikes you have plus one, or the number of bikes that would end in your divorce minus one.
Wow. There you go. Thank you, Val.
And it's not dissimilar with massage
guns.
We
also review my electric bike. So we should say, we should say that Baddiel and Ripley's Buy, Leave It or Not is a show on which we review stuff.
Yeah, I was getting to that. I've done this before. I know how to frame an interview.
I know you know, but I panicked.
But thanks
I panicked,
for that.
Chris.
Thanks for that.
I thought you'd forgotten everything.
Thanks for the radio hack.
This is what it's like working
with
him, Chris.
He knows
very
that.
Different.
I've been on it a few times.
I am sensing a fourth partner anytime soon. Nowhere to be found in this building. Yeah. All right, Faye, how did you get hoodwinked into this consumer comedy-based review podcast?
I suggested it to David.
Yes.
I have since regretted that.
Since I started talking today.
Yes. We've been sort of, going around the houses for years. We've known each other for years.
Yep.
And we sort of felt like everyone else was doing a podcast. But also, by the way, we didn't want to do the thing that everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
So we've gone quite niche.
Yeah.
I think that's clear.
But niche is where it's when they work, niche.
Well, it's a little corner that no one else is in.
Which is what you want. So, there's this thing, a silver arrow or silver bullet for podcasts, and it's smallest viable. And it sounds an aspirational that, but it's actually not, because J.K. Rowling, her smallest viable audience happens to be 700 million teenagers.
Can we have them?
Yeah, but it's smallest viable.
Is that a thing? Small is viable?
No, smallest viable.
Smallest viable.
Because if you go for your biggest possible audience,
right,
well, that's fine, but how about you start with your smallest viable, because it's more attainable, more achievable, then they'll be early adopters, and then they would be like the Avon ladies for whatever it is you're
doing.
That's
right. When we did fantasy football, sorry to mention a previous double act that I've
done,
but when we did that, me and Frank said, right, at no point are we going to explain any football jokes or football references on here.
Yeah, you felt the need to explain the podcast that we're going for. Doing this morning.
Yeah, we're not...
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
So, he's very controlling.
Do as I say, not as I do. Go on, crack on.
So,
you started it.
I get it now, but I get what you mean by smallest viable. Yeah. You find your audience, but yeah. I don't quite know what we have, because it's only just gone out, what the Badil and Ripley's buy, leave, well, or not audience is. It's people who like buying stuff.
We've got 6 reviews.
No, 11 now. We've got 11.
Oh, 11.
Not that I'm sitting there watching the reviews come in, but we've got 11 reviews on the Audible site.
Not everybody who listens reviews. So, the other thing you do with the podcast at the end is you say, if you like this episode, please do recommend and review and give us a review. And you do that shamelessly at the end of the podcast. That's what you need to do. Because what you'll do is you get people giving you 1 stars because they just love to see their name in lights. So you have to just sort of overwhelm them with people who actually like you. These are all the tricks, mate.
Thank you, Chris.
Is, all 11 of ours like us.
We can talk about it after the show. It's fine, you know. And this is all absolutely free. No, but it's hilarious. And it's available on Audible. It's exclusive to Audible. And we have to mention that because you can't find it. So if you go onto Spotify or anything like that and you search for it, you can't get it. You've got to go to Audible. That's the thing, isn't it?
Apparently, yeah.
No, that is because I tried it this morning.
Right. Oh, good, because I'm a bit confused about that.
No, you have to go to Audible, which is fine because lots of people do.
Can I name drop?
Yeah, if you go.
I was with Tom Stoppard yesterday, and he said to me, where do I find this podcast, right? And I said, you just search for podcasts. And he got his phone out, and then we couldn't find it. Me and Tom Stoppard.
Because you have to download the Audible app.
Right.
Because that's why Audible love you, because you're going to get people to download their app. And even if they then don't like your podcast, which I'm sure they will, but if they don't, they've got the Audible audiobook
library.
I'll
let Tom Stoppard know.
That's how it works. You remember when Sky had to get the football? They had to get the football. Well, Audible, they've had to get
us.
Badil and Ripley.
Yeah. I see.
Seriously. Yeah.
No, I get it.
You
get
are their
it.
Premiership.
Yeah.
Wow.
They
wow.
fought very, very hard for us. I mean, they asked twice, I think.
Right, we're done.
Are we? Okay.
Badil and Ripley's Buy, Leave It or Not makes no sense whatsoever as a title, right? It's unhelpful in the mechanic of the format.
You're right.
But it's a great podcast.
Thank you very much,
and that's
Chris.
The bottom line there.
Thank you.
And you can only get it via Audible. And once you get into Audible, there's a whole treasure trove of other wonderful things to listen to, including audiobooks and things like that. Badil and Ripley's Buy, Leave It or Not is out now on Audible. Maybe a UK stadium tour.
Looking forward to
come
it.
Come this time next year. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Cheers,
thanks,
Chris.
Happy Friday. You're awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's the man that pushes Verstappen to the max, and this upcoming season on Sky Sports F1 will be no different. They've unveiled their new car, testing is around the corner, and the first checkered flag is being ironed ready for Bahrain. So, from Red Bull Racing, please welcome the always Formula Wonderful, Christian Horner!
Formula Wonderful! How about that, Christian?
Good to see you.
Nice to see you. How are you doing?
I'm good.
All right, so first question, ask the Ferrari question and then we won't answer it. It's far too nerdy, but you can ask it. You can ask it anyway. Off you go.
What do you think about the new Ferrari side pods and the U-shape to channel the air?
The Ferrari, it's an interesting concept. I think that's the car that
It's not interesting enough for this interview. All right, so let's move right along. What's it called, that Ferrari?
Isn't it called the FR75 or
something
like that?
I've got no idea.
You don't care, do you? All right. So, Christian, we talked to you the day after the launch of RB18. RB18, the code name for the brand new Red Bull. Why is it called RB18?
Well, rather tactically, it's our 18th car. It's the 18th season that Red Bull have been in Formula One, so that's why we stick with that number.
Okay. We saw through it, though. So you launched it and then we all saw it and it was wonderful and you did this sort of global webcast and then the other teams sequentially unveil their cars. What do you think of the cars you've seen so far? Anybody got you worried? Anybody has you surprised? Anybody you think is trying to pull the wool over people's eyes, ears, nose?
I think I need to ask Noah that, to be honest with you. He knows what's going on. But
have you seen them all?
I've seen a couple of them, yeah.
Right.
Are you happy? One question. Are you happy that the silver arrows are silver again? Because that's quite a big thing.
He doesn't care.
Because they've gone from black to silver.
I know.
It's really important. It's a big step.
So long as they're in the mirrors, it's okay.
You don't know. Well, that's so fun. No, but seriously, has anybody got you, not worried, but intrigued?
I think because it's such a big regulation change this year, it's the biggest reg change for the last 30, 40 years. So... I think Adrian's been looking over what's, you know, some of the opponents are up to, and it's always interesting to see what solutions they come up with.
Right, for people who don't know, Adrian Newey,
who's our obviously star designer.
Yeah, he's a wizard, isn't he?
He sees air molecules. On day like today, he can see, you know, what's going on.
That's what they say. They describe him as the man who can see air.
Yeah.
Because he's, is he an aerodynamicist? Is that what, is that his
that's
title?
That's his, you know, his training, his background. So how he interprets that air running over the car is, you know, is phenomenal.
When did you first realise how sort of otherworldly he was? What what did you witness?
Well, I was always a fan of his cars growing up. I was a big Nigel Mansell fan, and Nigel was driving, you know, Adrian designed cars and winning world championships in them. So so I always had an affiliation to him, you know, from that.
And how did you get your job?
That's a very good question. well, I started life as a driver a long, long time ago.
I know. Tell people about that.
So, yeah, I started in go-karts and then coming through the formulas. I raced in Formula 2. I was a test driver with Lotus years and years ago. And but I wasn't quite good enough. And I thought, I can't get a proper job. So so I started a team in Formula 2 and won a few championships in that. And then Red Bull came along and said, look, we're going to buy Jaguar. Why don't you come and be with us?
And who was it at Red Bull that decided to buy Jaguar? How did, you know, was it a marketing thing? Was there a fan at the heart of the decision?
Well, Dietrich Mateschitz, the owner of Red Bull, he's a big Formula One fan. And I think that he wanted to have his own team in Formula One. Jaguar came on the market and Red Bull, you know, bought it at the end of 2004. And, you know, since then we've turned it around and, you know, we've won a few races and championships.
Who were the drivers for Jag in 2004?
2004, it was Mark Webber, you know, was one of the drivers, and Christian Kleen.
Right.
And then our first driver was David Coulthard, really? 2005.
So we are on the precipice of a brand new season. Lots of things have happened. I don't want to get too nerdy because I want to engage people.
Sure.
Who, you know, I don't want to preach the converted. But it is, last year couldn't have been more exciting from a driver point of view. And this year, it's already kicked off with a bit of controversy, which is what everybody needs and wants, because it's drama both on the track, you know, in the pit lane, around the track, you know, around the calendar, but it's sort of from the off, like a boxing match at the weigh-in. So already, yeah, you've got, you know, Lewis at the back end of last week when Noah's talking about the silver arrows being silver once again. You know, all this talk about Lewis, you know, was he going to walk away from Formula One? That was never going to happen.
No.
Never in a million years. So tell us about your take on sort of the aftermath, or, you know, sort of the if this was Succession Series 4, you know, we'd all be looking forward to it and talking about the plot lines. How do you sense things are just before the curtain raiser this year?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion over the winter. I mean, obviously, it was a controversial last race.
For people who don't know.
And, you know, Max won that race because there was a crash 5 laps before the end. And what people are forgetting is, tactically, we made the right call. They left Lewis out on 44-lap-old tyres.
Right.
He didn't stand a chance at the restart, whereas, you know, we pitted Max for new tyres. He made the pass, you know, on the last lap and became the world champion. And then there was a lot of controversy over the race director, you know, allowing cars to unlap, but not all of the cars to unlap.
Toto Wolff threw his headphones across the room.
He lost it. I think he's just finished his therapy and he'll be back for the season for the season ahead. But so there's a lot of controversy. The race director's been fired.
Which is sad. Very sad.
You know, because I think pressure like that, that's not right. But
it was great for the viewer.
It's great. I mean, Netflix
awesome
coming
out.
I mean, it's box office.
What do you want for this year? Obviously, you want a Red Bull win. What are your hopes and dreams for the sport this year?
I think to continue to put on, you know, a great show, to be great racing, to be wheel-to-wheel racing. It'd be great if there was, you know, two or three teams rather than just Max and Lewis going for it. I think Ferrari could be strong this year. And I think, you know, we just got to keep evolving. I think these new cars, these new regs are going to be interesting. But hopefully we can keep that number one on the car.
And what about sprint qualifying, which I loved last year? Were the teams fans or not fans?
I think we've got it back for three races this year. In Imola, where else have we got it? Brazil and Austria.
I'm sensing you're not a fan.
It's interesting. I think it could be tuned to make it a bit more jeopardy, because right, there's not enough risk for the drivers on the Saturday at the moment.
And what about that's interesting. So you want it to stay but be even better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And would you like it to be more prevalent, maybe at every single race or not?
I wouldn't do it in Monaco, but I think you could pick up to six races potentially that you could do it in the future.
Right, thanks, Christian.
Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Good to see you.
Bring on F1 2022. We cannot wait.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
If it's good enough for Angelina Jolie and Michelle Pfeiffer, it's good enough for us. The It we're referring to is a brilliant young actor nominated for this year's BAFTA EE Rising Star Award. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the hot property currently sizzling up our studio. It's Harris Dickinson!
Hello, Harris!
Hello, what a lovely introduction.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. So how much do you know about this award that you are up for?
I mean, I know a lot about the history of it. I know what a privilege it is.
Tell us about the history that you know.
Well, interestingly, my agent's mother was the founder of the award. So Kate Buckley's mum was the founder. And I don't know. I think through the years, it's always been a very important award for shining light on diverse talent as well, which is something that's pretty cool from all different backgrounds. And I think, like, I feel very grateful and honoured to be included in that, you know.
So excellent nominees alongside you this year. Past winners include who, for example?
Daniel Kaluuya, Kristen Stewart.
I think Tom Holland won it one year.
Tom Holland won it.
He's doing all right.
He's doing rather well, isn't he?
He's doing really
Watch
well.
Out for him.
But I mean, you've done extraordinarily well so far, which is why you're nominated for this. But you wanted to be a Marine.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. I almost joined the military.
Did you want to be a Marine, that's just what you were going to do. That was it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So tell us about that first, and then tell us about what happened next.
Well, when I was like, I was in the Marine Cadets from age like 14, and I really enjoyed it. It sort of gave me this like purpose that I otherwise didn't have, and acting was something I was simultaneously doing, but I never quite sort of imagined it would be a career, you know. So I sort of thought the military was an easy option, which it isn't. when we later look back on it,
but a more certain option.
More certain, and something that was a little more viable at the time, which is mad really when you think about it. But and then my drama coach, Graham Bryan, shout out to him, he's a legend. He convinced me against it. He was like, why are you doing that? You know, you could be an actor if you want. Yeah, well, I was like, really? All right. I didn't realise I could.
How were you as a cadet? Were you a good Marine cadet?
I was very diligent. Very
Tell us what that means.
I think I was just a good listener, absorbed information, you know, took instruction well.
What kind of things did you experience?
It was weird because even at a young age, we used to go on these training camps and we were shooting rifles and stuff.
Actual?
And it was quite a lot for a
full on
14-year-old to be like trekking through the forest with a big Bergen and a rifle. And, you know, you really, I think you start to like believe that's why it's kind of an indoctrination of sorts. You start to get into that like...
And what did you learn about yourself? Or what skills did you learn?
Ooh, that's a heavy question. Discipline. No. I had a lot of discipline. It taught me a lot of discipline.
Well, I also taught yourself that you were good at it. I would good at discipline. Because that is something. You either got it or you haven't. You either appreciate discipline or you don't. You run towards it or you run away from it.
Yeah, no, and I appreciated it at the time. It was something that kept me sort of focused, you know. It sort of kept me away from trouble. And I've transferred that into my career now and my life. So... I'm grateful for it, yeah.
That will help. So you had an acting coach at the time. Mm. Where did the acting coach come into your life? How did that happen?
Well, I was part of a theatre school called Royal Academy in Walthamstow, East London. And I went there a few days a week. And that
was awesome?
It was brilliant, yeah. That was like the place where you could go and, you know, there was no judgment. You could be yourself. Yeah. You could open up and experiment.
That high, the high of performance is, unless people have experienced it, you know, no wonder it's so addictive.
Yeah.
Because it's getting high in your own supply with your mates doing the same thing and creating something that's worth watching.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it gives you a chance to like work out these things especially when you're like a young man figuring out who you are and figuring out your place in the world. It gives you a chance to like work through that in a safe space.
Yeah, and I think theatre offered space. That.
Yeah, absolutely.
I get it completely. And and again, like you say, you know, you've got each other's backs. There's routine to it.
Yeah.
You know, you look forward to it at the end of the day. You know, it puts the pep in the step of an otherwise boring Tuesday in the middle of January or whatever it is. It's cool, man.
Yeah.
It's really, really, really cool.
Yeah.
So you had this brilliant acting coach. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's something like a video. You sent a video off. Is that right? Did you not send an audition off or something?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was auditioning for a few years. I was working, I was doing various different jobs. And then I worked around here, actually. I worked at, you know, Potter's Fields.
Yeah, yeah.
I worked on the bins. That was my plot of land. I had the responsibility, the big responsibility of emptying the bins for a few years, and that was my job.
And did
for
you
a while.
Do that because that was a job that facilitated you being able to act, should you know, as and when?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you know that's what Einstein did.
Really? What, yeah. Empty bins?
No, well, more or less. So what he did was he was you know, he was professorial at this sort of gilded seat of learning. Mm. But because he was so ahead of the curve, because he knew things that hadn't even been discovered or were unable to be taught because they didn't exist yet, but because he knew in his head and he could see the universe like nobody else could, nobody, his elders, didn't want to know. And so he was going through this pedestrian, perfunctory kind of process of learning. And he said he was writing papers that they wouldn't accept. But he said, but this is all true and I can prove it. And they went, yeah, yeah, upstart, go sit at the back of the class, sit on your hands and, you know, mind your tongue. And so what he did, he said, this is useless. So he went and worked as a blue-collar worker in a patent office, because that simple life allowed him to then do what he needed to do in the downtown, because it was the least taxing thing that he could make a living at. And that's what he did and why he did it.
I never knew that. That's interesting.
So you working on the bins allowed you to go and show up for auditions. What was your first ever paid acting job?
It was an advert for Volkswagen. It was a Volkswagen advert, and I flew to Barcelona for it.
How cool
but
is
the
that?
Interesting thing is that it was amazing. I was at college at the time as well, and I sort of thought, this is it, I'm out of here, you know. I was like, but I didn't actually, so they flew me and two other actors out to Barcelona, and they stood us in front of the whole corporate team of Volkswagen, and they were talking in Spanish, sort of saying our names and comparing us, and we were basically battling it out for the part. So it was like this weird situation where you're stood next to another actor.
Right.
Being...
It could be you.
Yeah. It was horrible. But once I got the job, it was...
What did you have to do in the ad?
Drive a car to a house, and then... get out and knock on a door and kiss my friend's mum.
There you go.
It was brilliant.
All right. Cool. Good luck, pal. I'm sure you don't mind. You don't mind if you don't win it, but to be nominated is a win in itself. You'd like to win it, of course, but you're in such great company. You know, you've just got to spread the love, haven't you, on the night?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Great to meet you.
You too, man.
Really nice to meet you. What a great young man. Search E BAFTA Rising Star to vote for any of the nominees. Voting closes on Tuesday, 1st of March. BAFTA take place 30th of March. And that was the lovely Harris Dickinson. Rock and roll.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's a fox around the dispatch box, a political goal poacher, and he's touring the UK with his show, Who Is In Charge Here? You'll find him on Times Radio weekdays from 10. So please welcome the incredibly entertaining Payne in Westminster's Derriere. It's Matt Chorley.
All right, Matt.
Very good morning. The fox around the dispatch box.
You like that?
Yeah, it's nice.
He's good, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's been a bit tired, but he's back on form now. He's been a bit tired because he had to film an advert for John Lewis all day Tuesday, and he was a bit tired.
He had to do a whole day's work. Amazing.
Do you know what the filming was? Him lying in bed. It really was.
It's more tiring than you think.
He came back to work, and I said, how are you doing? He said, I'm a bit tired. Expecting actual sympathy. For getting paid a fortune for lying in bed. So you were in bed for like twice as long as you usually are and came back to work tired.
Yeah.
Typical of the young of today.
Unbelievable.
How are you, Matt?
I'm very good.
You've taken to radio like a duck to water. We'll talk about your stand-up tour in a moment or two. And loads. I mean, you're up to so many things. How many... Are you up to a year at Times Radio?
It's nearly 2 years.
Is it nearly two
it's
years?
It'll be 2 years how in June.
How time flies.
How time flies.
Because we went out before and during the first couple of weeks, didn't we?
I came in here before we went on air.
That's right.
In June.
That's 2 years.
And then around
my birthday,
September, you happened to appear in the office on the day of my birthday, and we went to the pub.
We did.
Yeah.
And we had a good old chug.
We did.
A good old chug and a chat.
We did have a chat.
When we still could. And we can again now.
We can again now, exactly.
Today's the first day. We haven't mentioned it, have we? No masks in the building today. Masks downstairs, on reception, security. Everybody's like...
Plastic screens maskless. Are being taken away.
Yeah, I mean, you can still wear one if you want to.
Yeah.
On TFL yesterday, some people were, some people weren't. But today, it's no longer mandatory.
Yeah, yeah. It was quite mixed this morning, I'd say.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've already trained. Right, Matt is on tour now. So he was talking about going on tour with his... latest stand-up, Who's in Charge Here? But he's now done a couple of dates, so you actually can tell us whether it's funny or not, Matt.
It seems to be. It seems to be going well. The thing I'd forgotten, having spent, like you said, the last 2 years, I haven't been able to go anywhere or do anything, is I had a show and it was like two halves of like 45 minutes. You get in front of an audience. What's great, you get in front of an audience, you add 20 minutes because they start talking and I end up talking to them. So it's been, it's been a lot of fun. So about five dates in of 25.
Yeah, OK, so let's get people to the ticket outlet. MattChorley.com, M-A-T-T-Chorley, C-H-O-R-L-E-Y.com. MattChorley.com to go and see Matt tonight in Farnham, for example.
Farnham, exactly. Farnham. And I've got news.
Go on.
We're adding a new date in London.
Are you?
So we added, we did one,
don't
and that's
sold out. Don't tell me Wembley Stadium.
No, it's not Wembley Stadium.
Come on.
It's more intimate than that. It would be crass, I think, to play Wembley Stadium. At the Bloomsbury Theatre.
One or the other, that's fine.
Exactly.
Don't get caught in the middle.
Exactly.
Love it.
Keep it intimate.
Bloomsbury Theatre.
So the first two have sold out. So we're going to, from tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, there'll be tickets for the third one.
MattChorley.com exactly is where you need to go. So Farnham tonight at the Maltings.
Yes. Just
beautiful.
That's local to me. It's just beautiful down the road.
A couple of dates in Guildford because you live in Guildford.
No, I don't live in Guildford. We've been through this before.
Jesus. Sorry. Okay, I apologise.
I'd like to live in Guildford.
Well, you are for the next 48
yes,
hours.
Exactly.
Tomorrow. So Guildford tomorrow night and also Saturday night.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, why the confusion about you living in Guildford? Apart from the fact somebody's written it down here.
May have looked at the postcode because my post... I live in Fleet. I mean, it's not a million miles away from Guildford, but not actually...
Strange phrase, because nowhere's a million miles from Guildford.
No, that's true.
Because the planet's only 25,000 miles in circumference.
It's about, 20 minutes from Guildford.
Yeah, it can seem like a million miles. depending on what's going on the M3?
Yes.
Yeah, to Fleet, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, this is interesting.
Anyone else want to name any motorways?
Maidenhead. You're playing Maidenhead next Friday. I can see you next Friday.
Yeah.
Around the corner from me.
Yeah.
What time do you start?
7:30.
All right. Come on, this is great. Saturday, March the 12th. Matt Chorley is playing at the Chorley Theatre. For one night only, it'll be the Matt Chorley Theatre.
Chorley.
Come on. Chorley not!
Chorley. We went and did the radio show from there last year.
Did you?
It was a lot of fun. Everyone was very confused by me being called Matt Chorley. But it was nice.
Good. Yeah. So you got Sheffield, Lyme Regis this after that throughout March. Brighton Comedia, that's with a K. Leeds City Variety, Shrewsbury 7, Salford Lowry, London Bloomsbury, and just announced another London Bloomsbury. Bloomineck. Tuesday, 5th of April, and Thursday, April 7th, Cambridge Junction. Bristol Hen and Chicken. Crowds, how do you travel? Where do you go down best? How is the interbeing with the audience different regarding geography?
It's interesting. So the thing that I've really... So I use a PowerPoint screen. So I'm talking about obscure politicians.
Love it.
Put up a picture. And the thing that I'm discovering is people who I think are obscure are trapped... People know who Andrew Bridgen is, who I think is an obscure Tory MP who's a menace. But put up a picture of him. It gets like a good panto groan. People have quite strong views on Priti Patel and Liz Truss. They're a bit nonplussed about Keir Starmer. As a sort of focus group.
So these are political enthusiasts who like a little giggle along with their gaggle.
Yes, but you don't need to know anything about politics. I think the thing about lots of people say, I'm not into politics, I don't really follow it and all of that. And I think if it can be sometimes a bit difficult to get into. Like you try to get into a soap.
It's a fine line, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm the sort of previously in politics catch up. So then when you leave, you'll be completely across everything. You know all the characters are, you know the soap opera, and then you can start following it.
Yeah, good. Matt, you're awesome, mate. It's great to see you, man.
It's lovely to see you.
It's great to see you. And you are doing fantastic business
thank you very
in
much.
Everything. He's writing for The Times. He's got his podcast. Give that a shout out.
It's the Red Box podcast. If you can't listen to the radio show because you're listening to Virgin, then you can, of course, catch up on the Red Box podcast.
All right. Who's in charge here? Continues tonight in Farnham Maltings. Tickets available at MattChorley.com. He's a great guy to spend any time with, especially if you are coughing up shillings to be made to laugh, giggle, and big. Become engaged. Cheers, Matt.
Nice to see you. Cheers, Chris.
You're awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All right, that was the first half of our stunning guests already, but still to come, the one and only David Crofty Croft talking more Formula One with a brand new F1 season on Sky Sports F1. heralded this week with the first testing in Barcelona. The wonder of wildlife, Steve Backshaw, shares all ahead of his new Ocean UK live tour. Genius surgeon Dr. Rahul Jandial chats the mind, physical well-being, and his latest book, Life on a Knife's Edge. Living legend Roger Daltrey tells us all about his upcoming Teenage Cancer Trust gigs at the Royal Albert Hall. And former Olympian Steve Cram shares with us how thrilling it was to commentate on the Winter Olympics curling events, and of course, looks ahead to this year's Run Fest Run. We won the curling. Well, the girls won the curling. We had the golden curls and we had the silver boys. And then we'll all be Run Fest running together. Let's get right back to it. Dapper Dave, who's next?
Fast cars, glamorous locations and an unflappable gift of the gab. Our next guest is the closest thing to James Bond you will ever find. The new Formula One season exclusively on Sky Sports F1 is almost upon us, with testing in Barcelona happening right now. Please welcome the incredibly testing, David Croft!
Hello, David. His words, not mine, by the way.
Outrageous. Yeah. Morning.
He's still grouchy. He's still grouchy. I'm very well. Dapper Dave's still grouchy because he's still tired from his day of filming on Tuesday. He's filming an ad for John Lewis. He had to spend the whole day in bed in a John Lewis besheeted and bequilted bed. It was exhausting.
Really?
He's still tired, still grumpy.
I mean, seriously, I'd get tired too, spending all day luxuriating between Egyptian cotton and silk pillows.
I had to get in and out and in and out and in and out at least five times.
Oh, is that the old John Lewis hokey-cokey? Oh. Checking it all about. Oh, my. Anyway, Crofty, A, I love you.
Yes.
B, I love you. C, I love you. D, all the way to Z, I have missed you, my friend. I've missed you so much.
And well, I missed you too. Although it does feel like the shortest kind of closed season on record for Formula One. It's only been about 60 days, 70 days since we were in Abu Dhabi. And so, we're still talking about Abu Dhabi all
so
the time.
It feels
we?
Like it. Is that because it is the shortest break?
It is pretty short. We have finished later, but that was back in the 60s. It was the 13th of December we finished, and here we are in February. We're getting going again. But I tell you what, Chris, for all the fact that I've missed you and Vassos and everybody, I cannot contain my excitement for the start of this season. This is going to be such a cool year. Have you seen the cars?
Noah and myself have been watching every unveiling with all the various live webinars from all the various factories. Pretty cool.
Oh, absolutely. We've done a bit of corrective surgery on the Formula One cars in the closed season, and gone are a lot of the barge boards and the winglets and the aerodynamic stuff that makes it very hard to follow the car in front. Instead, we have these beautiful, super sculpted, wonderful modern Formula One cars with a lot more simple aerodynamics, a lot of ground effect, underfloor downforce creation. And the fingers crossed at the moment, the hope is that we're going to get overtaking, cars following more closely, and therefore more excitement as well. That's why we're so excited at the moment, because we have set the scene for more and more equal competition to come.
Right, Christian Horner has been on the show a couple of times in the last couple of weeks, once on the phone, and he was live with us on Monday, and he was brilliant. But the thing about Christian is, and I love him like a brother, he can't bring himself to talk about any other team, any aspect of any other team, good or bad. He just can't do it, which I love him for. He's so focused and so committed to Red Bull Racing. And you can ask him a question. He won't not answer it. Well, he doesn't answer it. He starts talking again, but he won't talk about any other teams, which is fair enough. So can you just give us a little peek behind the curtains for, let's go for Ferrari, let's go for McLaren, let's go for Mercedes, and then one other. You pick the other.
Okay, so yesterday was the first day of testing. I'll tell you that despite the fears of all the teams that we'd have a lot of unreliability because of these big rule changes, we actually had 1,104 laps in Barcelona yesterday, 16 drivers on the track. The fastest amongst them was Lando Norris, 103 laps and the fastest time of the day. And you're thinking, well, Lando's going to be really pumped because McLaren were quickest. But actually, he was joking that it was bad to be quickest on the first day because now everyone expects him to go and win the championship and it's going to be really easy. It won't be, but McLaren certainly looked reliable and that's good. Charles Leclerc and the Ferrari did 80 laps. Now, I'm really interested in the Ferrari. They're side pods. They're the super scalloped, scalloped, if you want to call them that, side pods. They look a bit like kind of Yorkshire pudding tins with a little indent and quite a wide base. They've gone different to everyone else, but Ferrari are the big outsiders for me this season in terms of a team that could win the championship that isn't Red Bull or Mercedes. And they have reliability and speed and pace, and Leclerc really attacking the track yesterday. George Russell and Lewis Hamilton separated by, well, less than 0.2 seconds. George Russell's first day for Mercedes, fourth fastest, Hamilton fifth fastest. The times don't really matter. It's how many laps they got on the board. So we'll neatly go back to Red Bull, 147 laps on the board. That's outstanding for the first day of a first test. 2.5 Grand Prix distances around Barcelona. It was quick and it was reliable.
Perfect. You still there? You haven't dropped off, have you?
No.
That's just a very concise ending. I'm not used to concise endings because I work with Vassos. I was talking to Vassos the other day on the air about, you know, I said, you know, Barcelona testing. I said, and then what is it? He said, straight to Bahrain for the Grand Prix. It's not.
No, straight to Bahrain for testing and then the Grand Prix.
Yes.
That's exactly what I said.
No, because they're a week apart. They're a week apart.
Yes, I know they are. All right, I've got the dates.
Don't get all giddy on me, for heaven's sake. So Ted Kravitz is in Barcelona, but Crofty, it appears you're working from home.
Yes, I'm on my sofa this morning. What's wrong with a bit of WTF? No, that's not right. No, that's
the opposite. WFH is what you mean.
Well, I'd say everything's wrong with a bit of WTF because I'm still half asleep.
Can you stop saying it, please? Thank you very much indeed.
Sorry.
We need to put some WD-40 on this interview. Before we go any further, in fact, this is it, because you clearly think you're still asleep and you're not on the radio, which is so unlike you. Do you get paid extra for basically being the voice of Drive to Survive?
No.
Well, you should.
Thank you.
You absolutely should.
I've been saying that for years. Drive to Survive comes out 11th of March, the new series. Not only do I not get paid a bean for being on Drive to Survive, but Martin Brundle and I didn't even get a credit for the first three series as well.
But you,
everyone else gets a credit.
That's
we
just
don't.
Shocking. You have an agent?
Yes.
Well, you need to get a new one. No offence. Yeah, I've met her. Yeah, but, I think.
No, we sign our life away when we...
Oh, is that the deal?
Sign for our pass every year. I mean, even Dave probably gets a credit for his John Lewis advert. We get nothing except a lot of people getting into and interested in Formula One. That's a massive thing for us.
I know, it's a big deal. I get it. I'm only joking, sort of. I do actually think you should get something for being in it, but anyway.
Well, yeah, even a baseball cap would be nice, you know.
Yeah, something
I'll
or
go
other.
With a free T-shirt. Yeah, a free T-shirt will do.
So, so let's get this right. So it's Barcelona today, Bahrain tomorrow, and then it's the final race on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Is that right, Vass?
No, yep. That's right.
Exactly right.
Well done, Vassal.
Go on, Crofty.
Yeah, 11th of March.
Yeah, go on.
Full live commentary. Uh-huh. Bahrain test will be there. Make sure you are too. Sky Sports F1. Thank you very much.
All right, Crofty, love to your sofa. Bye-bye.
Take care.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Sorry about this, Dapper Dave. You've been usurped. Because we're going to talk about the teenage cancer trust now, Dave. And you've written the intro. But seeing as we have a teenager here, you know, we'd be missing a trick if we didn't get the teenage to introduce the king of the Teenager Cancer Trust. Don't you think so?
No pressure, Noah.
By the way, Noah, this is Roger Daltrey you're introducing. Now, you've met Roger before, haven't you?
I am very lucky to, yes, yeah. I have.
And he actually gave you not one but two harmonicas.
He did.
Which still take pride of place on Noah's best of bedroom shelf, let me tell you. All right, Nodgy, he's just turned teenager. See, now, Dapper Dave, had this been 2 weeks ago, you'd still be in the pound seats with the intro because he was only 12 then. But now he's a teenager, we have to do this.
I'm looking forward to this. I'm looking forward to it.
Noah, it's over to you.
Generation-defining rock and roll and unmatched charity work, our guest does it all. Tickets for the Teenage Cancer Trust gigs at the Royal Albert Hall are available from 9 a.m. this morning, and here to tell us all about it is someone for whom you should not accept any substitute. It's Roger Daltrey!
Yeah! Morning, Roger!
Yeah, morning, Chris. Morning, everyone.
How are you today, my friend?
Sleepy,
but you're here and we'll take it, Rog. Thanks so much for being with us again this morning. Congratulations on what is a fantastic lineup for the Teenage Cancer Trust gigs.
Thank you. I mean, it's astonishing because I've got to tell you, 2.5 months ago, we only had two people, and that was The Who and Youngblood. And of course, The artists, they're so generous to this charity, it's wonderful. They recognise that the music industry relies on the age group that we take care of. It's the lifeblood of the music industry, teenagers and young adults. So it's just wonderful to see them step up.
It really is. And, you know, I've been to a couple of your gigs at the Royal Albert Hall and they are so special. They're such a special thing to attend. And I encourage anyone who loves music and loves supporting amazing causes to get online at 9 o'clock this morning and go to teenagercancertrust.org and try and get some tickets to one of these nights. So do you have any favourites yourself, or are you just very happy with all the fruit in your bowl?
I'm just amazed. I mean, because what we've got such a real spectrum of music right across the board this year, from Youngblood, who I'm really excited to see. I think he's one of the brightest young stars on the horizon out there, playing music other than, you know, rap, hip hop, or drill, or any of that stuff. He actually is someone who I think is going to be the new David Bowie. And of course, you've got Don Broco on the Monday, Youngblood on the Wednesday. The comedy night is on the Tuesday, and we've got London's Pride. We've got the Nutty Boys, Madness. And they're going to do something a bit different at the Albert Hall. I don't know what they're up to, but they're going to do something a bit special. The Who are doing an acoustic night, which we're trying to keep the budget down, because to put the Who on stage when we're not actually on tour is quite expensive. So we've got a group of musicians together, along with Pete and myself, and we're going to do some special acoustic stuff, so that'll be interesting. And obviously, this guy, I absolutely adore him, Liam Gallagher. He's a treasure, and he's doing the Saturday night. So let's hope we've still got enough beer in the hall. last time Liam or Oasis played the Albert Hall for me, they drunk the place dry. They really did. And then on the Sunday, we've got the fabulous Ed Sheeran, who has been so supportive of the Teenage Cancer Trust, not only in the UK, but Teen Cancer America, which is the same thing, but in America. He's been there for me over there too. And he's just a governor guy. He really is. He's what you see is what you get, and there's no fanny with Ed. He's absolutely stand up.
Well, I got to tell you, Roger, I've seen the lights, you know, over the years, and we've had you on to talk about them, and you've sold out. But this is really as good as it gets. Don Broco on the Monday. The comedy night is fantastic. Joel Dommett, Tom Allen, who we love, Rob Beckett, Rosie Jones, Ramaswamy Nathan, Susie Ruffle, and Sean Walsh. I mean, that is a trip, you know, triple, quadruple, quintuple comedy lineup. That's on the Tuesday. Wednesday, as you say, Youngblood, 23rd of March. Thursday, Madness, who are just going to tear it up. And you yourselves, The Who, doing an acoustic session. That's going to be amazing. I can't wait. No, but the point is, for Who fans, I mean, you know, when do you get to see that? Never. And, you know, and needs must, because you want to make as much money for Teenage Cancer Trust as possible. So you are keeping the budget down, and that's why, because, you know, the lower the cost, the more money you're going to make, and that's sort of what it says it does on the tin, and that's what you have to deliver. But The Who, acoustically, that's going to sell out straight away, Friday the 5th, 25th of March. Saturday, like you say, Liam Gallagher, 26th of March, and then Ed Sheeran to top it all off. I mean, I'm so excited I can barely speak, as you can hear. I mean, that is some week. Well done to you. Well done to your team. Give your team a shout out. Go on, Roger, because they deserve it.
Yeah, it's the team. It's Rob Ballantyne, Chris York, Des Murphy. They are just absolutely phenomenal, the team I have. I make the phone calls to make the offers that they can't refuse.
Yep.
And then they take over and do all the legal stuff with all the agents and the organisation. They are absolutely fantastic. Well, and I can't thank them enough.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Roger. You're awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for everything you've done over the years.
All right, all the best, Chris.
You are the best. He literally is the best. He is as good as it gets. As good as it gets. I will be going online. You know, I get an invite from Rog most years anyhow, but I'm going online. We're going to bag as many of these tickets for the Evans clan as possible. So you're up against us. Vassos, do you fancy a few of these tickets?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, okay. Yeah. 9 o'clock.
Sophia?
Oh, I'm already on it. Me and my dad, we're doing it.
Which night do you fancy? What nights do you fancy?
I think the Friday, for sure. And maybe the Sunday, too. Make a weekend of it.
Friday, Sunday, and if we can. TeenageCancerTrust.com for tickets for this year's amazing week of Teenage Cancer Trust gigs at the Albert Hall.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
As the lights go out at the Winter Olympics and Beijing passes the baton to Milan, there's one man who needs a four-year break. He's commentated on 33 curling matches involving British teams. That's 100 hours behind the mic and both Team GB medals. So let's say wham, bam, thank you, Steve Cram.
Morning, Steve.
Morning, folks. How are we doing?
Oh, my goodness me. We're very well. Well done. I mean, how did they do it? How did you do it, pal?
Yeah, do you know what? I'll have to go back and recount them. Thanks, Vassos. It certainly was at least that. Do you know what? Great fun. I absolutely loved it. I'm so... You say every 4 years. I would do it every year. I love curling. Look, you know, I'm so pleased for Evan and the girls winning the gold medal. They weren't the favourites to do that. The boys were. The boys were really unlucky. You know, they met Nicholas Eden, who's the greatest of all time. They met him on a day where he played out this well. It was like playing Barcelona on a night when Messi couldn't miss either. You know, so they did nothing wrong. But curling, I'm so pleased back home. We don't know, Chris. You know, when we're out there, we're just doing match after match. Have no idea. You know, what's happening back here, but it sounds as though people have been loving it, watching it, staying up late at night, and everybody loves curling again.
Everybody does. I mean, they always do, you know, when you're commentating on it. Do you remember the first curling commentary from the Cram microphone?
I got asked to do it in Vancouver when there was a guy called Doogie Donnelly used to do it for BBC, and I'd been at the curling in 2006 at the Winter Olympics, not commentating, just presenting. So they said, well, you obviously know something about it. You were there watching. I went, I can't commentate. But I had Rona with me. And by the way, can I just say to Rona and Jackie and my producer, Peter, who I know are listening this morning, very tired, got back late last night. Thanks, guys. You're all brilliant. You're there two fantastic people that sit alongside me because without them, I would be talking absolute nonsense most of the time. I do talk nonsense a lot of the time, but without them, it would be most of the time.
All right, and so before we get into what was it like to be at the Winter Olympics this time around, you know, how exciting can curling get? Because it's often been described as like chess on ice, you know, clean as you go as well. We quite like that. They tidy as they go. That's nice. That's interesting.
Yeah, you know, it is genuinely great sport. Your kids can do it. You know, old people can still do it. You know, I'm thinking of having trying to end into the over 60s. The issue, Chris, is just where can you do it? You know, you've got to have... we don't have that many rinks that in Scotland. There's obviously a lot more than there are in England. There's only one or two in England. The main one's in Preston. So really, we just need more facilities because I think people would love to go and take part. You know, so we're hoping that when curling is on everybody's minds, that you know, there's a lot more thought about, hey, how could we make this happen for more people? Scotland is the home of curling, obviously, but we wanted to see it played more right around the UK with a bit of luck.
I know how golf came about with the Shepherds off in St Andrews, 22 holes, four fell into the sea and it was 18, and that's why it has been ever thus. Similarly, I would imagine, curling started on the ice up in Scotland with actual stones back in the day?
Yeah, you know, Scotland 100% is the home of curling. The Dutch kind of have a bit of a, you know, we had a version of it and all that sort of thing. But by the way, where were the Dutch? In Beijing, is what I would say. So, no, you know, it belongs to Scotland. Yes, you know, with stones and then eventually... The whole thing about the brushes, you know, they used to do that just to brush the frost off the ice first.
Right.
So that they could, you know, play. And then gradually that became part of the game. Initially with sort of corn brooms and things. And then as the years have gone by, much more tech around that. But that's a massive part of the game. A lot less curling outdoors these days. It's just not cold enough.
So, Steve, next stop, Runfest Run. So you better get some rest, pal.
Yeah, I've just remembered. Oh, man, we were talking Runfest out there. One of the high-ups in British curling was at the first Runfest.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, we were talking about it. Yeah, 100%.
All right.
Yeah, we're all ready for it. Already got the route sorted. Really looking forward to it in May. So if you haven't signed up, for goodness sake, sign up. This is going to be better than ever at Englefield. Beautiful place, by the way.
Stunning.
Stunning. Really good. So I'm looking forward to that. I've got to get running again first. I'm really worried about Vassos being able to absolutely tank me. I've had 3-4 weeks of nothing.
While you've been away, he's invented mash, he's claiming.
Cauliflower mash.
Do you know what? I woke up early just because of the jet lag thing, waking up early. I mean, really? What was it? Cauliflower?
Did it help? I bet it
really?
Didn't. How's that going to help with jet lag?
You know what? At times the food wasn't great out there, particularly in the International Broadcast Centre. You know, and they were trying to do vegetarian, because obviously people are vegan and vegetarian things. And you would see this bowl. We had robots delivering us food all
the
time.
I know. I hear about all this.
Yeah, it was good. But, you know, there'd be a picture of cauliflower, for instance. You know, it did look like mashed cauliflower. And, of course, people would go, ugh, and I have to eat it. So people were forced to eat that sort of stuff. I don't think anybody who'd been to Beijing would be bringing in some cauliflower mash to work going, hey, folks, come and try this. This is fantastic.
I know. And you can only eat it with a straw. You can probably have it IV, I would imagine, as well. Right, so Steve is a team captain of the Bees at runfestrun.co.uk. For tickets, go to runfestrun.co.uk now, and it's going to happen 20th to the 22nd of May, 2022, at a brand new venue, Englefield House. But that's not why we got him in, but that is a fact. Steve, rest up. Thanks so much, pal, and welcome home. I'm glad you got home safely with your pals.
Thank you. Glad you enjoyed the curling, everybody.
How could we not? Couldn't get away from it.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
If there's an adventure to be had, our next guest is the man to have it, and he's coming to a town near you to tell you all about them. His brand new UK tour, Ocean, kicks off in April, so ladies and gentlemen, the presenter doesn't get any better, the subject doesn't get any wetter. Please welcome the superb Steve Backshaw.
All right, Steve.
Subject doesn't get any wetter. There's an introduction.
So your tour, Ocean, give us the headlines.
Yeah, that's right. We're going around the country, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland and England as well, in April and early May. And it's going to be talking about marine themes, the ocean giants that fill our seas and everything that comes along with it. So I'm psyched.
I bet you are. OK, how much do you need to know? You know, how much of a deep dive, forgive the pun intended, do you need to take in order to be able to convey this to live audiences?
Tricky, isn't it? Because, you know, short of getting everybody very, very wet, how do you actually bring the ocean to life on stage? It's something that I'm struggling with right now, but I've come up with a whole bunch of live science experiments that I'm going to do on stage, most of which will probably go wrong. We've got giant life-size replicas of some of the largest animals ever known to have existed on our planet. There'll be a massive screen with outtakes and bloopers, glorious natural history footage. It's going to be awesome.
Steve is going to be on tour with Ocean, and you can get tickets now at stevebackshaw.com. Are we heading towards the Easter holidays for this, Steve, for the families and things?
That's the idea, yeah. So we're going from late March through April into early May, and we're going pretty much everywhere.
Okay, by the way, if it goes well, I'm sure it will, because you only do Gangbuster or Gangbusters. Please bring it to Carfest. That'd be awesome. Why not?
What? Idea. Yeah. Why not? We should.
Okay. Now to evince the fact that you're... we think he said cracking there. Your microphone cut out and all we heard was ink. I think he said... Can you confirm you said what a cracking idea?
I almost certainly would have done. It wouldn't have been anything naughty.
Yeah, good. It sounded like we bleeped you and this is pre-recorded, but we didn't bleep you. And I promise all he said was cracking at the other end of the... line. It does sound quite blustery where you are. Are you actually on a boat now?
I am in the woods, Burnham Beaches, right now.
Right.
It's pretty still. I mean, certainly not how it has been for the last week, which when I would not have been walking in these woods, that's for sure.
What are you doing in Burnham Beaches?
Well, Helen is presently off with our three little kids, Logan at 3, Kitten Beau at 2, and they're making a den. They're constructing their very own den right now.
I love it. And I also love it when people have made dens in the woods, in the forest, up on Marlow Common, where we are not too far away from your stomping ground, you know, and the kids leave the dens for other kids to enjoy and add to. That is so cool, isn't it?
It is absolutely perfect, yeah. And it saves us an awful lot of work as well.
All right. I love the outdoorsiness of your skin and bones, and the fact that you now sort of have contaminated in the best possible way your family... with your love and your passion for the great outdoors. Is it true that you took your wife, Helen, for her first Scottish winter climb last week?
Well, it was also our first trip away from the kids, and it was our Valentine's Day present as well.
Aww.
So, it was lovely to go up on the Caledonian Sleeper and all of that. That's super romantic. But I think most people would think that dragging someone up a freezing, icy gully on the north face of Ben Nevis on Valentine's Day might not be the best move if you want to maintain a marriage. But she seemed to like it.
Now, you're supposed to break the ice on the first day, aren't you? Not years into the relationship. But there's some proper pictures of her here with an ice pick or what do they call those things that you use?
Ice axes for your hands and crampons for your feet.
Got it. I mean, she's got it all going on, hasn't she?
Well, unfortunately, the thing is, having an Olympian as a wife means that I am second place at absolutely everything. And I keep trying to throw her out of her comfort zone and do the kind of things that I do that, you know, have taken me decades to learn how to do. And she just cruises all of them as if it's, you know, ridiculously easy. So if anyone out there has any ideas of something that I can set Helen to that she'll struggle with, then please, please tell me, because it's not working for me.
Listen, there's a picture of your family here on Instagram, and that looks like it's where we are, Cookham Deanish up on the hills there, overlooking the Thames. But you look so happy, Steve. I'm so pleased for you.
Well, I think that fatherhood changed me in a way that I kind of wasn't expecting. I think a lot of dads particularly struggle with early childhood and thinking, you know, what on earth am I here for? This is just a mess of nappies and smells and screaming. But for me, I had the lightning bolt. My life changed overnight in the most positive way. It became my reason for being. And I think having the opportunity to introduce our kids, I mean, you use the word contaminate, I'm not sure I'd go that way, but to bring them into the natural world and to introduce them to adventure and to the outdoors, it is just it's put everything in a completely different light. Things that I've been doing since I was a kid all of a sudden have taken on a different new significance. And even just pond dipping, climbing trees, you know, these things are now so precious.
Steve, before you go, can you please confirm, because people don't believe when I tell them, and it's one of my favourite pub ammo facts, please can you confirm that you had a houseboat built in the shape and the form of the house you were actually having built, which you lived in at the bottom of your garden until the house's completion?
We had two of the most perfect years of our life living on a houseboat while we built our present house. Was it the same shape as our present house?
Well, did it match your house?
Yeah, I guess, kind of.
Oh,
I
mean, I'm wrong about my own fact.
I would say that our house now has quite a nautical look to it. It has quite a boat-like appearance. So I'm going to... Yes, Chris. I totally agree with your pub.
You're just being kind. No, it's because I once sailed past your houseboat and your house, and honestly, from the river, your boat merged a little bit into your house. It was like I don't know, a pod from the lair of some kind of Bond baddie. Not that you are at all, you know, because they had a sort of thematic thing going on. I've gone too far with this.
I like that description. All I can say is that living on a houseboat was utter joy. I've never felt so connected to an environment as I did to the river when we lived on that boat. We had swans coming to the back door
for
the morning, kingfishers perching on the bow of the boat. It was joyous.
And did you manage to sell it in the end?
We did, eventually. It took a while. And thank you so much for your help. I'm pretty sure that was...
I'm not looking for a car. I just wondered how it went, because we did mention it last time on the radio, didn't we? He's gone. I don't blame him. All right, because he thought there was some financial penury.
You're going to ask him for some money.
I thought there. Well done, Steve Backshaw. His tour, Ocean. Available tickets now. Tickets are available now. SteveBackshaw.com for the Easter holiday period and either side a bit-ish.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
If you want to know what's going on up top, our next guest is your man. His most recent brilliant book, Life on a Knife's Edge, is out now. He's a brain surgeon. He's a neuroscientist. He's a snappy dresser. It's our go-to brain guru that really focuses the mind. It's Dr. Rahul Jandayal.
Hello, Rahul.
What a pleasure. I've had a double espresso, so be ready. Jet lagged with a double espresso.
Okay, and three storms in Canton as well. Yeah. So you went live and direct from... Los Angeles. You're not there now. You're here now. So you were over at the Oxford Union?
Yep, at the Oxford Club. I was meeting with a student who's a fascinating young man studying theology, and he was asking me questions about the soul and the mind that he's hearing from his professors. So I had to sort of shatter some myths, you know, with practical knowledge.
So tell us about that, because, you know, the soul, is it, you know, is it beyond science? You know, is its nemesis science? How did that go?
No, I think science is informing it. I mean, we used to think it was the heart, and I've opened chests as part of my training, and when you see that monster beating inside, you think this is where the soul is. But now, just a few months ago, we transplanted a pig heart into a human. So it's clear that the soul is not in the chest. I do think animals may have a soul, but that nebulous feeling about where the soul resides comes from looking at a cadaver, that it's just flesh and bones, but then it can be animated. And at some point, we realize the soul must rely in the brain, because without the brain, there is no life.
And is one of science's problem when it comes to things like the soul, linguistics, because, you know, I was reading about Chinese language at the weekend, and you know, one of the things about Zen is the reason Zen is more explainable via Chinese literature is because each word is as much of an image as it is indeed a word, you know. And they say one showing is worth a thousand sayings.
Correct.
And the great thing about the Chinese language is it can paint a figurative picture as well as try and deliver a literal message. And sometimes that is our problem. If we can't explain it with the words, and most things in the world we really can't, and most things other than us don't even want to or feel the need to explain themselves like that, that could be the barrier we're up against.
I like that. I mean, it can't be articulated. There is something that suffuses us. I mean, when you wake up out of anesthesia, you can see people come alive. It's hard to explain as a certain wire or a certain chemical. There's an animation. I think that's where Mary Shelley, with the thought of sort of zapping people alive, and we still do that. We do shock therapy for people with depression. We shock the chest for people who are having heart attacks. So this integration with electricity, I think, my thought is we're electric. We are electric minds and electric bodies. And that's where, when you see a story like somebody who's hit with lightning and they can do math all of a sudden, or how does electricity snap us out of depression? I think the answer there for the soul is that we are electric.
We are electric, but because everything is electric and we're part of that network. And so once again, if we look inside ourselves for the soul, or, you know, there is another, you know, if you meditate for long enough, and I'm sure you've done this, but if you meditate for long enough, you become boundless, you know, and you become connected, and you no longer have a center because you don't feel like you need to. And you suddenly then begin to contemplate, you know, the soul may not be inside us. We may be inside the soul.
That's fascinating. And I think that's something that we see with patients who have remarkable recoveries. You see how their energy is before surgery, when they're battling cancer. You do see more of that than just the procedural or the mechanized kind of concepts.
And what about this, I wish I could remember her name. She's got a book out at the moment. She's this brilliant neurologist, and she is fascinated by the fact, for the first time in fMRI or MRI, probably fMRI, they've been able to scientifically prove the existence of spirituality.
That's fascinating.
Via anecdotal, basically reflections and stories, and certain parts of the brain are fired off when people recount their spirituality. They said, okay, that bit there lighting up, that is the beginning or the essence of spirituality.
I would add to that. I would say that it's more of a global or a brain-wide phenomenon. I'll give you a very specific example. We do something called awake brain surgery. It usually has to do with the left temporal lobe. We do it because the address for language is not very specific, so everybody has to be, you know, woken up in surgery, and we zap the surface. So the surface of the brain is where all the sparks are happening. And when we zap the surface, and this has been documented in literature for decades, people have visions of God. And it's fascinating. They always have visions of God that they're reared with. And so my hypothetical experiment, because I go to South America quite a bit, is there are still tribes that have not been in contact with humanity. And how fascinating would it be to do awake brain surgery on somebody that has not been socialized with the concept of spirituality or God? And what if we did tickle the surface of the brain and they still had visions of something higher? Then maybe that biology and spirituality are linked, and that's our advantage as humans and our ability to connect with each other.
Right, we're almost out of time. By the way, if you just tuned in, we're listening to the genius that is Dr. Raoul Jandial. Life's on the Knife's Edge is out now. Find out more about Dr. Raoul at Dr. Jandial, jandial.com. That's Dr. Jandial, jandial.com. Before we go, we know that if we want our kettle to work, we plug it in. That's where it gets its juice from. Where do we get our juice from?
Oh, that's interesting. That is a very tough question. I would tell you, from the same way that jellyfish can create electricity or an electrical eel, it's the same thing.
It's a
battery. If you separate two ions, positive charge and negative charge, the physical world wants them to come together.
Yeah.
If you separate them and they run towards each other, that running, that movement is electricity. And that's what's happening in the 100 billion jellyfish we call neurons in our mind.
You're awesome. When do you go back to Los Angeles?
Tomorrow.
Oh, give our love
to London for the weekend.
Give our love to the sunshine. Thanks, Jen. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's
awesome. Awesome. Always awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget, you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast. And you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.